This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Hey, it's Monday. Matt and Brett coming up a little bit later on. Jack Rice is going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour. We're going to talk the latest on the trial there, Chauvin. Also coming up a little bit later on, we are going to be talking to Kamie Miller and Jonathan Raylander. They are respectively the... I believe I even said the DFL Senate District 41 chair, and Kamie is the DFL Senate District 41 first vice chair. So they're going to be talking to us. They've got a big deal coming up here about a forum on domestic terrorism tomorrow night at 6:30. They're doing it online. It's a virtual event, and it's got a star-studded cast here of people that are going to be experts talking about domestic terrorism. It will tell you all the details about that coming up in a little bit. Brett, I will let you know right now, it is just a smidge out there slippery. It's going to be a long commute for you heading home.
Yeah, it's the middle of March. We shouldn't be too surprised after these nice few weeks we've had.
Well, and one of the things that I was paying attention to, because there is a gradient which is pretty intense, that within like 60 miles, it goes from 1 to 2 inches up to 5 to 6 inches. And it shifted overnight, and initially it was funny because this morning it was like 1 to 3, 1 to 3, 3 to 5, 3 to 5. And then for like 10 minutes, it was going to be 5 to 8. I'm like, what? We're going to get hammered? And then all of a sudden they pulled it back and went back to 3 to 5. And now it still is 1 to 3. And I'd say we got about 2 inches outside right now. Looking at radar, it looks like it's going to continue to snow on and off at least until about 9 o'clock tonight. So don't be surprised by it. It's that just garbage snow that just makes it for horrible driving. Really wet, but it can kind of cling together, so you get really slippery spots. Just give yourself plenty of time. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 current accidents working in Minneapolis, St. Paul. What's this little gem here? That's just construction. So there's no major problem there. But 6 accidents working around the metro area, so it's going to be a little bit of a commute. Just FYI, the snow once again continuing in through the evening hours. Make sure you take it easy out there. I got to start off today by I get my allergies kicked in. Did you have a nice weekend?
I did have a nice weekend. How about you?
Anything particular that just kind of stunning for you?
It was warm enough to bike, so I did that for a couple of hours each day, Saturday and Sunday. Especially yesterday was just awesome.
I got out on Saturday. I had all the intent of getting out on Sunday. On Saturday night, I had a lovely little virtual birthday party for a friend of mine, Rob. Happy birthday to you, Rob. And as I was in that evening, I started feeling like I was having allergies probably on Friday, but like allergies, and it's allergies, okay? Before, you know, it's allergies. I've had them before. It's allergies. My daughter is as I said, was the canary in the coal mine. She basically is the first one to get it. I'm like, I know it's coming. And it depends on the year. Some years I just get a little bit of a sniffle. Some years I'm like, I'm out. On Saturday night, I just was feeling kind of more and more tired. I basically spent the entire Sunday in bed, just kind of sleeping, taking it easy, because I just had this congestion. I'm like, get ready for Matt and Radio. Hey, I don't know if you're aware or not, but I have a little congestion. And so, I'm feeling better now. Taking the day off yesterday was a good thing. You cannot just say, though, anymore, it's just allergies. You really can't. And whether or not you know, you think it's overreacting or not, or underreacting, the reality is that when I think for this, at least for the next 10, 15 years, people are going to start treating illness like we used to, that you should take a break and rest if you're not feeling good. One of the things which, and especially too, if we have a pandemic that's running somewhat amok, to, you know, limit your time and your interactions with other people. I think that that's a safe bet. But as much as I want to, I mean, I can't blame a person for like, you know, hey, you know, you're just, let's, in case it's not allergies, let's be careful. Let's, you know, like this and staying away. And I mean, it really is just, we do not just have I'm sick anymore. And I would love to see America return to a point where we actually encourage people who are sick to go home and rest. And we don't say you've got 3 days to get better. If you're not better in 3 days, you're fired. We, you know, the one of the greatest crimes I think against the American worker is that if you are sick, they do not, the expectation is that whether that's making food or taking care of kids, the mentality is you need to go and do that while sick because America. And no one else on the planet does that. Well, no one really else in the developed countries does that. In countries where we're supposed to, you know, value the human life, you know, kind of we're supposed to be these leaders in the world. No other country does this. I was over in Germany and, you know, people over there, it's like, you know, you need to take a day off. They're like, take two, go, you're fine. You know, that's what the law's there for. You can go and relax. I'm kind of the person, I don't think this is too much heavy lifting, plus the fact that the only person I'm going to, if I've got anything more than allergies, it's just Brett. Come on.
only me.
It's only Brett. or Patrick. I mean,
Patrick, it's fine. Yeah. Just have him produce in the room with you there.
Patrick, you say? Okay, yeah, sure. Anyway, Phil. I'll just call him Phil. No, it's kind of one of those things where we should take this stuff seriously. And, you know, it will change. It will be interesting to see how much it does change. My grandmother, my dad's mom, who lived to be 103, went through the Great Depression. You didn't take food and put it on your plate and not eat it. She remembers when people didn't have food. So you didn't take food and not eat it. That was wasteful extravagance, and you should never do that. And that the impact of that on of people. My daughters are very concerned about me. I hope that's just not the way I look. Like, oh my God, is Dad okay? I mean, that's kind of a constant thing. But my daughters are somewhat, you know, like, Dad, are you sure it's just allergies? It's just allergies. Are you sure? Is there something you want me to leave for you in the will? Is that what this is? I was looking at your extensive collection of Doctor Who stuff and, you know, I think that you should let me have that. Okay, thanks. Good. At least I'm loved. Yeah. No, they are somewhat concerned because of the way things are going. And there are some really interesting, because their world has changed, there are some really interesting elements I'm kind of getting exposed to because of them going back to school finally and actually interacting with the rest of their classmates on a larger scale that, you know, it's just, my daughter says, oh, everyone was complimenting me on my jeans. And I was like, really? She goes, well, yeah, because I haven't seen them. And she's like, wow, that's actually a good point. They're used to being more cautious. And trust me, I think this current bunch of Republicans out there, I don't think any of them are going to be quick to write laws that are going to be helpful to the American people in regards to you know, taking sick time off, making sure people who are sick can get sick, take time off and get better without, you know, punishment, making sure people who are sick are getting health care if they need it. I don't think that the current batch of Republicans are going to do anything on it. But mark my word, the generation that's coming through this generation of 30 and younger, especially people who have lost family members, I'd say within 20 years, we're going to have an extensive healthcare system that's going to be far better at taking care of the American people, but on top of it, what you're going to get is you're going to have family leave and sick leave and laws that prevent companies from just firing you if you're legitimately sick, for goodness sakes. 952, that's coming. Trust me, that's coming because this group of kids that's coming in that right now, the Generation Zers, Gen Z, that group coming through, they are not taking any crud. They are tired of this. They are tired of everything. And it started with the gun violence stuff, but it's going to everything. And they are looking to change the world. So buckle up. Hopefully it would be the case.
I hope that's true. I mean, anyone who has a kid that goes to school knows that when someone gets sick in that classroom, it's going to everybody. Same at a workplace. You're sitting there in a cubicle. It's like a train. You can just know that virus is going down. It's eventually going to get to you. Yeah, I hope we're in that era where we're turning the clock back from Reaganomics of you need to work no matter what. And
you know, I can't remember being sicker than when my kid would come home from daycare with an illness. And their immune systems were much better honed to deal with it. They'd come to us and all of a sudden I was 3, 4, 5 days where I couldn't really function. It really is amazing. We don't have a much more comprehensive plan, but well, here's hoping we start learning from our history. All right. Jack is going to talk more with us, but I want to give you some updates on the Chauvin trial as it's been happening in Minneapolis. The $27 million settlement by the city of Minneapolis reached last week with the family of the George Floyd quickly weighed heavily on the ongoing selection of jurors in the murder trial of a fire police officer. While the number of jurors chosen grew to 9 by midday on Monday, defense attorney Eric Nelson expressed deep concern that jurors already chosen and those yet to be chosen will be prejudiced should they learn of the settlement, thereby denying his client his right to a fair trial. During Friday's proceedings, the city council signed off on the settlement, followed by a widely publicized announcement. Before the prospective jurors were questioned, Nelson said, "I'm gravely concerned with the news that broke on Friday related to the civil settlement. The fact that this came in the exact middle of the jury selection is perplexing to me, Your Honor." He said the settlement timing was very suspicious and has incredible propensity to taint the jury pool. I mean, he's the defense attorney. He's going to basically try to find excuses. Prosecutor Steve Schleicher argued for jury selection to continue uninterrupted, adding, "All I can say is the court is here. There are some things the state of Minnesota and this prosecution team can control. There are some things I cannot control. We cannot control the civil aspect of this case, and I cannot and we cannot and do not control the Minneapolis City Council, and we certainly cannot control the news cycles." Judge Peter Cahill agreed that the timing of Friday's announcement was troubling. Those city officials have answered questions about why the settlement was disclosed to the jury selection. "You would agree it's unfortunate, wouldn't you," Cahill asked Schleicher, "that we have this reported all over the media in the midst of jury selection?" "I don't know which way it cuts," Schleicher said. "The problem is that it cuts. I think it's the defense has a legitimate concern, and even the state has a concern." The judge continued, "I wish city officials would stop talking about this case so much. At the same time, I don't find any evil intent that they were trying to tamper with the case. The timing is not related to the case." Okay, first of all, it wasn't just the city of Minneapolis talking about this. George Floyd's family was talking about this. And so it's kind of one of those things where I hope that they're not saying, well, the family should shut up, because that would not be good. I don't like where that kind of implication is coming from. We talked about this, and I talked about this weekend. The reality is that this $27 million, if they hadn't settled, I think when they had, it would have been worse later on down the road. And as a matter of fact, I even posted an article which an expert said, no, yeah, this is actually a smart move by the city of Minneapolis, because either way, if Chauvin is found guilty, they're going to basically have you'll have the trial thing saying he's guilty of sin. Even the jury found him guilty. There you go. If they, God forbid, find him not guilty, the civil trial will be what people look at is, will there be any justice here? And then you could be looking at $50, $60, $70 million if he's found not guilty. I mean, it really is a case where I can understand why the city of Minneapolis is doing this. And I can understand why the city of Minneapolis is letting everyone know this, too. Cahill said he intended to bring the 7 jurors chosen before the settlement announcement back into court so they can be questioned about what they might have heard about it and how it might affect the ability to serve in impartiality on the panel. The judge said he would consider Nelson's motion for continuance and the possibility of moving the trial to another location in the state. Desperately, they want to move this thing out of the city of Minneapolis, and I am sorry. I am sorry. The only other place, you should not take this trial and move it out to some county where there isn't a black person in, for 20 miles. You shouldn't do that and put it out in, you know, one of these Republican far-right districts and basically load the jury up with half of them are police officers. No, no. This heinous crime happened in Hennepin County. Hennepin County should have the right to prosecute it. And on top of that, if you have to move it, then move it to St. Paul. Don't move it to Ramsey County. Do not move it to some, you know, out in the middle of nowhere county that will, you know, basically give you a jury that in a million years, you know, would never convict. The jury, heck, half the people probably have, you know, you are part of organizations that encourage racism. I'm not going to, no. Whether it's Oath Keepers or Proud Boys or just straight out Klan members. No, that has to happen in Hennepin County. Attorney General Keith Ellison, whose office is leading the prosecution case, came in the courtroom and just as proceedings were about to resume and said something along the lines of, is there anything else someone would like to not accuse me of? In reference to when Nelson commented during motions that Ellison's son, Jeremiah Ellison, is on the council and that the timing of the settlement was suspicious, the council unanimously approved the payout. Ellison's spokesperson, John Stiles, said that the Attorney General has nothing more to say about the apparent rhetoric statement. Ellison was not in the courtroom when the afternoon session began. Jeremiah Ellison did not immediately respond to messages seeking comment. The eighth juror to be seated, who is black in his 30s, said he had seen the widely viewed bystander video of Floyd's arrest and said in the court that I don't think Chauvin had any intention of harming anybody, but someone did die. Somebody could have still intervened and stopped it. When pressed about assessing Chauvin's intent, the man said he could still definitely look at the case from an objective point of view. Nelson asked the man who works in banking and coaches youth sports if he ended up voting not guilty, would be able to tell the kids and coach you coach and explain what you did. The man replied that he could. The ninth juror selected was a white woman in her 50s who lives outside of Minneapolis and works as an executive assistant in the clinical healthcare setting. She said she had viewed a bystander's widely circulated video, but wrote in her questionnaire filled out months ago, I couldn't watch it in full because it was too disturbing to me. She said that she pledged Monday that I'm not in a position that to change the law. I'm in a position to uphold the law. He's innocent until he proves otherwise. The morning's final juror was swiftly dismissed by the judge after hearing him say the television in his workplace break room is constantly on, exposing him to updates on the case with five more jurors yet to be chosen. It's chosen before the live stream trial starts in earnest in March 29th. The panel consisted of four people of color and five people who are white. More specifically, one multiracial woman in her 20s, two black men in their 30s, one Hispanic man in his 20s, two white women in their 50s, and a white man in his 20s, another white man in his 30s. The impact of the viral video on Floyd's death was felt Monday during jury questioning, just as was during the week of selection process. A 75-year-old man was dismissed by the judge after telling the court, I didn't even see the whole video. I saw as much as I could take of the video, and I was appalled by what I saw, and feeling continues to be with me. Well, that's kind of because it is. It's kind of because it is. The man said he was particularly bothered by the initial accusation against Floyd that he tried to pass counterfeit currency in the store, prompted a police response that seemed to me to be inappropriate. Anything, Mr. Floyd needed some medical attention. To exert that kind of force for that long just seemed to be out of line to me. So, like I said, Jack is going to be with us here beginning of the 5 o'clock hour. We'll go over this more with him. We'll talk about the defense's case, whether they do have a shot at this case being postponed or a change of venue, and obviously more details there. A lot more to get to when we do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Can I get some nasty bass? AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. All my best to the residents of Woodbury who are dealing with a horrible accident over there. Police have identified four of the five teenage boys involved in a deadly car crash in Woodbury that left one dead and four other injured. Woodbury Public Safety Commander John Altman issued a press release on Monday morning identifying four of the five victims, including 17-year-old Garrett Baumgartner, who passed a passenger in the 2015 Honda Accord, who was fatally ejected when it struck a tree and split into two on Settler Ridge Parkway. Bringing the news doesn't typically identify those injured in crashes unless they have been publicly named by family or friends. Therefore, is not naming the other three 17-year-olds. Some places in the media have. The conditions, however, are listed as serious but stable due to a myriad of injuries, according to police. The driver's identity has not been released due to data practice laws, nor has the driver's condition been provided. It was, I will say this one thing about the driver. It is a. It sounds like the car was registered to some parents in Woodbury, so the feeling is it's another one of the students. Once again, on behalf of myself and everyone here at the station, all our best to the family, especially the family who of the victim. These kind of things. It's scary. It is scary. My dad. Now, I don't know what happened here, and I want to be very clear. I don't know what happened. Obviously, there'll be an investigation, but I will never forget. When I was a kid, I was driving a car, and I had some friends in the car with me. And one of the kids in the front seat decided he wanted to fight with one of the kids in the back seat, and it was a stick shift. And he unintentionally kicked the car out of gear. Thankfully, it did not go into another gear and do damage. But, you know, that was, you know, I basically pulled the car over and said, "You guys, stop or you get out. Stop or get out of the car." And because one of the things that was, you know, and I think the rules today seemed a little bit more stringent than they were back then. But there was always, if you got a group of kids in the car, there was always, you know, some kids that like to goof off. And it was kind of dangerous. I as a parent who has now two kids who are driving, I have said the same thing both times. The reality is that I tell them, if you have kids, if you're driving your friends around. Now, the first rule is this, is if they're driving for the beginning year, the first year they can drive in Minnesota, they cannot drive with more than one other kid in the car unless it is family member. So if they have like three siblings, they can drive the three siblings. But if it's not a relation, it has to be only one. But I've told them, if they get into a car and they have their friends are goofing off too much or you're making the distraction, pull over, tell them to stop, and then get back on the road. Don't try to you know, corral that stuff while you're driving. Once again, I want to be very clear here. There's going to be an investigation of what happened in this tragedy. I'm not saying that this was roughhousing. I'm not saying anything. It could be faulty motor. It could be faulty brakes. It could be a lot of different things. It just, you know, as a parent who has kids who are in that driving age, you know, it's these are the stories that, you know, that scare you. And it's that fear that has driven me and drove my father to tell me, drove me to tell my kids. And I hope that they tell their kids, you know, take it seriously. You are in a large metal thing with glass and steel, and it's filled with gasoline. It's a wildly dangerous thing to do, and you should not be messing around with it. You absolutely shouldn't. 952-946-6205. Brad is in Robbinsdale. Wants to chime in. What's up, Brad?
Yes, I was going to ask. Last week, Jack Rice said that second-degree murder in the Chauvin case was analogous to felony murder. And with felony murder, you're punishing the act. I mean, the getaway driver does not intend to that the bank teller was killed. So intention has nothing to do with it.
So I believe so you want me? I'll tell you what, Brad.
I'd like to get some clarification on why it's analogous. I mean, what intention is involved in second degree murder, and why he said it was analogous to a felony murder, which, as far as I'm can tell, it does not involve intention at all.
I'll tell you what, Brad, what I'll do is this. I promise you got Jack coming up here at 5:05. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Brad. We'll ask him the question when he comes on the air. I'll get that out to him right away. And you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Brad, it was, why did Jack say that second degree murder is like felony murder?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yep.
So it's, you know, basically it's more of a clarification on the second degree murder charge rather than, because the third degree murder charge, the defense didn't want that in there because that seems to be the one they're probably going to get him on for sure. But the second degree murder is, okay, clarification on that for the felony. Okay, we'll take care of that when we get Jack on the air. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. Minnesota coronavirus update. Plus, boy, Mary Kiffmeyer's a stupid idiot. I'll get to that in just a moment, too. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Sometimes you start feeling so lost. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. I have not seen if the Senate Republicans have voted to end Governor Walz's emergency powers officially again. Once again, he extended them for another 30 days. They have the right to vote against it. They're going to vote against it in the Senate. There's an interesting other bill that's floating around currently by the Republicans in the Senate here. And there is a debate going on today. And by the way, can I just make a point to someone who writes the newspaper headlines at some of these newspapers? Just because Senate Republicans want to do something doesn't mean it's going to get done. And the mentality is, oh, the Senate Republicans are going to curb Governor Walz's powers. No, not unless the House goes. And then, of course, you got a veto override, even if the House did go with that, which you're not going to get that. So good luck. The Minnesota State Senate Republicans are aiming to curb the executive powers that have enabled Governor Walz to impose a mask mandate, change how business and schools operate and restrict social gatherings. A year after Walz first declared a state of peacetime emergency, allowing him to act quickly during the COVID-19 pandemic, the GOP-controlled Senate voted 38-29 on Monday on a proposal that would make it easier for them to end the emergency powers. Balance needs to be restored. We need to become a co-equal branches of government again, said Senator Dave Osmek, Republican from Maine, the Orc himself, who sponsored the bill and said he would once again make legislators active partners with the executive branch. The Senate proposal would not allow the state of emergency to be extended unless a majority of the members in both the House and Senate approved the continuation, a.k.a. moving the goalposts. We can't win the game now as we wish we could, so we're going to just change the entire way we play the game. And then, aha! See, because they can't with the House, you're not going to be able to get that vote, so yeah, you know how it goes. I'll come back to that in a second, though. Currently, both the Democrat-led House and the Republican majority in the Senate would have to vote to end the emergency for the status to be lifted. Democrats have contended it is too soon to end Walz's powers. And by the way, Governor Tim Walz has done an exceptional job managing this pandemic on behalf of Minnesota. He has done an exceptional job. When you look at the nightmare states around us, the Dakotas, Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota is it's amazing how well he has done. It is absolutely amazing. And even more important, when you go and look at like where the zip codes are, where the cases are, if you know, we would be doing such a better job at this if not for these border counties that are on with Wisconsin, the stuff that's on the Dakota side. My God. That's where we're getting a lot of cases on these border counties where people are going in and getting the disease. It seems like they're getting the disease from these other states. We would do a lot better on that. However, the Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka said if the emergency continues through May, it would become part of the end of session budget negotiations. Republicans, meanwhile, noted legislators in at least 40 states are considering more than 200 bills or resolutions to limit the provide oversight of their governor's emergency powers or spending. We will do what needs to be done to respond to the pandemic, said Michelle Benson of Ham Lake. Okay. But there has to be collaboration and balance, and the voices across Minnesota need to be heard. We are a year into this fight, and we will be much more effective if we can be more collaborative. Okay. Since you, Senator Benson, and Paul Gazelka, and the Orc have brought this up, let me step back for a second here. I remember an October morning before the worst spike in this pandemic, which killed thousands in this country, tens of thousands in this country, sickened millions in this country. And as that was wrapping up, and the health experts were saying, wow, this is getting out of control, and the Republicans were going, health experts, oh, please, we're not listening to these so-called experts. I wish they had. Instead, the Republicans in mid-October or so scrambled on out to the front steps of the Capitol and sat there and screamed, reopen everything! Reopen Minnesota! Everything needs to be open. Thank God Tim Walz was in charge. Can you imagine the death count in this state? Can you imagine the case count in this state if the Republicans were allowed to have any of their demands catered to during this crisis? Holy God. We are talking probably a few thousand more dead, and we're probably talking I'll go even 100,000 more sick. I have no problem saying that because that's what they wanted to do. Open everything. Thank God they didn't. Oh, and by the way, there's one other little nugget we have to remind ourselves when it comes to Republicans who scream, once again, we will do what needs to be done. Funny story. After the election last year, the Republicans in the Senate decided that they were going to rub Tim Walz's face in his restrictions, and they had a big celebration out in Lake Elmo. I know. And from all accounts of it, there was very little mask wearing, and there was not much social distancing, as the Republicans high-fived about how they had put Governor Walz in his place. And what they ended up doing was creating a super spreader event, which sickened most of their caucus, or many in their caucus, I don't want to say most, many people in their caucus, and likely killed one of their own senators. Likely killed one of their own senators. And then on top of that, they didn't tell the Democrats in the Senate they were sick. You want to be in charge of a pandemic? And you guys yourselves created your own super spreader event just to own the libs and likely killed one of your own people and didn't tell anyone else when everyone was sick, and you think you should be in charge of this? I wouldn't put you clowns in charge of a spoon drawer, let alone a pandemic. And you want just to people to forget that? No. When it came time to make tough calls, Governor Walz was willing to do it. You guys just were playing politics, and you likely killed one of your own senators. So shut up. Sit down, shut up, and just get out of the way of the guy that's doing the job to take care of all Minnesotans, not just your people you're trying to win points with politically. For God's sakes, you likely killed one of your own senators with your arrogance. Oh, yeah, but put us in charge now. Wink, please. But if I may, there was a special kind of stupid on display today as they debated this bill. This special kind of stupid was presented by Senator Mary Kiffmeyer, who is a unbelievable source of stupidity. I mean, she is brick dumb. And you can say to yourself, Matt, come on, Matt. That's a little harsh. Aren't you being a little harsh on Mary Kiffmeyer? Let me explain. During the debate, and this is from our friend Kevin Featherly, during the debate on Senate File 4, the OSMEC bill that requires an affirmative vote in both chambers to preserve governor's emergency powers, Senator Kiffmeyer cites a false meme that COVID-19 is the 19th strain of the coronavirus. It's not. The 19 refers to the year 2019 when it emerged in China. this woman read this stupidity into official Senate ledgers. This was part of her speech. This was a part of the official transcript of the Senate debate. Was someone saying something so stupid, something so basic, such a basic fact check could occur on, but she was, I'm going to tell you what's right and what's not. You stupid moron. I wouldn't put you in charge of the spoons. Kiffmeyer, what the hell's wrong with you, you dolt? Seriously, you dumb fool. You don't go even do a basic fact check on this? No, you just, you know so much better than everyone else, don't you, Mayor? Oh, you know. It's not, it's because it's the 19th strain. It's the 19th nervous breakdown. That's what it is. That's where it comes from. What is wrong with you? Just how do you not know? You're a sitting senator in the state of Minnesota. You're supposed to be part of the senior house, the more thoughtful, the more genteel house in the Minnesota legislature. And here you are, God forbid facts or reality get in your way because your narrative is going to be there. God, Mary, how stupid are you? And that's a legit question. I mean, seriously, if this is what you're reading into official transcripts in the Senate, how stupid are you? Because you're stupid. I mean, this goes back to like when with the Bidote stuff. Remember that? Bidote. And I was like, okay, you do understand we say a version of Bidote every day when we say Mendota, right? The French translated it from the Native Americans and then the English translated it from the French. Bad case of phone call. Bidote became Mendota. But that's Bidote. So you're saying to me the anglified version of Bidote is okay in Mendota, but the original real world Bidote is some affront to white culture? Please. It's so disappointing how little intelligence matters to Republicans anymore. How little basic fact checks matter to these people. Here you have a supposed, she was the Secretary of State for a while. And this idiot doesn't understand when they say COVID-19, it's for 2019, not the 19th version of coronavirus. She should not be a senator. If you are that dumb, you should not be a senator. And I understand in her district, she's probably beloved. And my rant against her will only encourage that love. But sweet Jesus, if I had a senator who, I'm going to paraphrase, said, oh, you see that bright thing in the sky? Yeah, you mean the sun? No, that's not the sun. That's Jupiter. I would say, whoa. And you're sitting as a U.S. senator, you say? A Minnesota senator. That is a new class of stupid.
That is the only analogy you came up with right there. I'm trying to think of what analogy would be as stupid as what she said. That's it. Jupiter is the sun.
The sun is not, is Jupiter. That's Jupiter. That's not the sun. That's Jupiter. It is amazing to me that this is what the Republican Party thinks is intelligent debate. Something so basically fact-checked that it's actually hard to comprehend an educated, intelligent individual who Mary Kiffmeyer is supposed to be doesn't know the truth. Mary, maybe you should pull your head out of your social media streams and basically realize memes aren't facts. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. God, how stupid could you be? Well, Mary Kiffmeyer, I guess. Well, ask a question, you get an answer. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. And Brett, you bring up a good point. You know, there are some people out there that are going to say, hey, Matt, Boy, that's harsh calling her so stupid. Okay, this wasn't on some Facebook meme thread where she's talking to just her friends. She puts out, once again, she doesn't understand COVID-19 has nothing, the number 19 doesn't have anything to do with the number version, the 19th nervous breakdown or anything like that. It's just the year that it came to light, which was 2019 in China, December 2019. That's the COVID strain, 2019. And she didn't do this on a Facebook stream. She did this arguing for a bill on the Senate floor, and this is part of the official transcript. This is supposed to be someone who is what was the Secretary of State. How can you be this intentionally stupid? It is, I understand you say, Matt, we're not the mean ones. Someone's got to point this stuff out. Dear Lord, if a Democrat said anything half as ignorant as this, there would be a call for an immediate expulsion of that Democrat from either the House or the Senate for not knowing what their job curtailed.
If Joe Biden said something like that, it would be 25th Amendment immediately.
It would be. It would. You know, that's just, there is no other way to describe it. That is just bone stupid. And I got to tell you the truth. Lately, the Mary Kiffmeyer track record doesn't give me much hope that she's actually going to come back to any kind of level of intelligence. I mean, she has said some just absolutely stupefyingly doozy things lately. And wow. Yeah, she's stupid. That's just stupid. 952-946-6205. The Minnesota coronavirus update. Minnesota, by week's end, will surpass 500,000 known infections of the coronavirus that causes COVID-19, named after 2019, reporting an additional 829 infections on Monday, along with one death. The state's total of 498,218 known infections only consists of Minnesotans who sought diagnostic testing. It's likely an undercount, given that as many as half the infections produced no symptoms. Health officials have estimated that 20 to 30% of the population has actually been infected. Regardless, the known count means almost 1 in 10 Minnesotans have been diagnosed with COVID-19. And so far, once again, the death total is 6,747. Hospitalizations of 26,295 state residents. Minnesota health officials said they are concerned about a recent uptick in infections among teenagers and young adults, some which are related to organized sports, even as progress in COVID-19 vaccinations continue. I don't know. Brett, have you heard? I thought one of the strains, I mean, and the strains we know about are England, South Africa, Brazil. Those are some of the various strains. Someone told me that one of those strains actually affects the younger population more than it's affecting the other groups, at least, or more than it has. The other strains have affected younger groups. Had you heard that?
Not with any of the strains, no.
Okay. I'll see if I can dig that up. I could have sworn I saw that one of them was actually affecting younger people more. And if that's what these strains are about, then that could be the case. Well, the state on Monday reported 1,260,771 people in Minnesota had received COVID-19 vaccine, and that 724,692 had completed the series either by receiving the two doses or the single dose Johnson & Johnson. 3 in 4 senior citizens in Minnesota have at least received a first vaccine dose. That's great. Vaccine was initially prioritized for seniors, healthcare workers, long-term care facility residents, and educators, but is now being offered to non-elderly adults with underlying health problems, as well as workers in the key frontline occupations. The one reason for concern of the emergence of the more infectious variants of SARS, COVID-2 virus, which played a role in opening ongoing outbreak in Carver County, centered on organized sports. The outbreak prompted the opening of a pop-up testing in Chanhassen, and a state recommendation of young athletes seek testing at least once a week and 3 days before any competitive events. Statewide indicators of pandemic activity remain stable, though. The state's reported positivity rate, COVID-19 diagnostic testing, is 3.6%, below the Minnesota caution threshold of 5%. Minnesota hospitals reported admitting a total of 260 COVID-19 patients as of Sunday, a slight increase from the week earlier, but a substantial decline from the 1,864 hospitalizations reported at the peak of the pandemic on November 29th. How many of those were Republicans again? Senate Republicans? quite a few, actually. Forecasts of stable or declining COVID-19 activity in Minnesota prompted Governor Walz last week to announce relaxation of restrictions designed to slow COVID-19 transmission. At noon Monday, bars and restaurants were allowed to increase their operation capacity to 50 to 75%. Group social gatherings are allowed to expand 15 people indoors or 50 people outdoors with no limit on the number of households. The state official on Monday stressed that a 6-foot social gathering distancing requirement remains in effect that could reduce some of those new capacity figures, but that's not a bad idea. This requirement will likely have the effect of reducing the numbers of people permitted of various settings to maintain required distance between individuals and parties. And I want to take the last few minutes here of this hour and remind people, when Republicans have been in charge, almost all the time, it's been the same exact thing. They open everything up. They say, "You coronavirus, we're not going to live in fear, liberty, freedom." And all of a sudden, then they have a massive spike. And all of a sudden, they get real quiet. And what they do is they have to kind of put into place restrictions that basically prove that they were wrong to do it in the first place. Dealing with a pandemic is like a lot of things. We're relearning things. It doesn't take bravado and the volume of your voice. It takes a skilled, thoughtful, science-based response. And that is Governor Walz. That is Governor Walz to a T. Unfortunately, as Republicans are demanding they get put into power again, I can tell you right now, this state could have millions of cases, maybe even millions of deaths, and they'd still be sitting there saying, "Applebee's needs to stay open." I don't trust them. Heck, they don't even know what COVID-19 means. Hour two of the Matt McNeil Show up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Real quickly, snow is still on and off in the metro area. Roads right now, I'm looking at least 15 accidents on the major roads, a lot probably on the secondary roads. It's that nasty kind of snow out there, Brett. You know, it's really wet, and if it gets kind of padded down, it's we're going for a ride. Whee!
It's the funnest snow to shovel, too, isn't it?
Oh, you're going to make me cough. Stop that. 952-946-6205. Jack Rice is our legal expert here. JackRiceLaw.com. That's JackRiceLaw.com. He's kind enough today to join us to give us an update on what his thoughts are in regards to the Chauvin trial that's going on in Minneapolis. Hey, Jack.
Hey, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing well, sir. Hey, let's start off. I got it. We had a caller that called a question. You last week had said the second-degree murder, you referred to that as more a felony murder. And right. and Brad had called up, and he was wondering, could you explain that a little bit more? Why is that? And once again, what's the difference between that and third degree?
Sure. Here's the real difference, is that what felony murder really means is that while it wasn't purposeful, they didn't do it intentionally, what it essentially has to do is you have to prove that they were committing a felony at the time, and while they were committing the felony, somebody died. So that actually is the second degree murder charge. I've had to deal with this myself in the middle of trial. And so when you're dealing with a murder charge like this, what you're actually fighting is the underlying felony. In this case, it's going to be the felony assault charge against Mr. Floyd, and that while there was the felony assault charge against Mr. Floyd, Mr. Floyd died. That's essentially the argument that's being made. That's actually different and a higher standard than we're seeing in the third degree charge, where essentially what it is that it's kind of a depraved heart idea that you're trying to hurt somebody, but you're not committing a felony while you're doing it. And when that is going on, actually somebody else dies inadvertently, also unintentionally, but you don't have to be committing a felony at the time when that happens. So in other words, it's kind of the third degree is a lesser charge within the second degree in a way. Mm-hmm. The standard isn't as high. That's the distinction. Then, of course, there is that manslaughter charge sitting out there, and that basically is a much lower standard that shows that you're sort of being so dangerous, you're being such an idiot that this was going to happen even if it wasn't intentional. And in fact, that's one of the reasons the sentencing guidelines reflect a difference. Both of the second and third degree charges have a presumptive 150-month commit. The manslaughter charge only has a 48-month commit. So in other words, 4 years to serve rather than 12 and a half, give or take.
Jack, the city of Minneapolis on Friday announced a $27 million civil settlement with the family of George Floyd. I read an interesting legal synopsis that said that Minneapolis was smart to do this because no matter what the outcome of this trial is, that number would likely have been higher. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't. Actually, I think it was an idiotic move. I think it was maybe the worst thing that Minneapolis could have done. And here's why, and it's for a couple of reasons, is that first of all, when you settle a case right now, if that's the argument, then you settle it before you actually start picking a jury. And the reason is that when you're picking a jury, once they get picked and they get, the term is impaneled, in other words, like they get seated and you're ready to go, they're going to be sequestered. In other words, they're going to be put in a hotel just like OJ's jury was. And in that case, they don't get access to the media. They don't get access to anything. And so ideally, they're going to be separated from this issue. The problem that happens now is as of Friday, they had seven jurors. Now they have nine. Of those seven or nine jurors, they are not sequestered at this point.
Yes.
Because they are not sequestered, technically, we don't even know who they are. And so if anybody likely will walk up to them and go, hey, by the way, did you hear what the city of Minneapolis did? They just settled this case for $27 million. What that does is that basically throws another layer of stuff on top of this potential jury. And then it makes it even more, if you want to call it likely, that they might think that Chauvin did something. Now, from a due process standpoint, we got to at least give this guy a fair trial. If they find him guilty, so be it. The problem is that right now they're going to have to pull back those seven jurors and talk to them about what they've heard about this. And they may get kicked as a result of that issue. On top of that, what the defense did today as a result of this is that they just filed again another motion for a venue change, which means they would move it out of Minneapolis. How much did Minneapolis just drop on this? Was it $1.5 million just on barriers alone? So in other words, they could potentially move it to a different county, so that different county has to actually prosecute this case. Think about the delays, the problems, the cost, the danger. All of those things are happening because that decision was made right now.
What is the likelihood at this point, do you think, that they are going to move the trial then out of Minneapolis?
Well, the defense wanted this thing moved out originally. And, you know, when you and I talked about this last, and nobody's saying this, but I'll say it, the reason that the defense wanted this out of Minneapolis is that Minneapolis is the most diverse county in the state of Minnesota.
Yes.
And because it's the most diverse county, what they really wanted is they wanted a county like Stearns. They wanted St. Cloud, you know? You get St. Cloud, what you get is a very white jury, a jury that looks like Derek Chauvin, and the idea is that you can connect with a jury like that and say, this guy's just like you. Now, the problem is, does that sound racist? Of course it does. But I think what you're trying to do is to get the jury that will do something like that. It really is challenging at this point because what you have is you have the city council acknowledging fault in the middle of this thing, and it just sort of it throws a wrench into the gears of it. If you listen to the arguments from the defense counsel today, that was their argument. The prosecution was objecting, but even Judge Peter Cahill today himself was saying, you know what, this cuts both ways, but the problem is that it cuts, and it cuts actually against the prosecution and the defense too, because you could make the argument, as the defense will, that, you know what, it really wasn't Derek Chauvin that made the mistake in this case. It was the city of Minneapolis and the Minneapolis Police Department for allowing that technique to be used, which is the knee to the neck, and they did. And so the argument could be that, you know what, because of the city and the reason they paid this thing out, even though they won't say it, but the reason that they paid this thing out was because the city was the one that was wrong from the beginning, and it wasn't a single guy. That will be part of the defense.
And you see, and this is part of the problem that they have with the police, is that the police know there is no accountability for them. So they basically, the police union's been able to keep this kind of a method of detaining someone in place against even the city council, because they have the union can overrule these kind of rule changes. And so, but then as the minute something goes wrong, they can point to the city and they said they should have stopped us.
Exactly. See, you nailed it. And the problem that you have with that is this has the potential of giving the likes of a Derek Chauvin a way out, because he can turn around and say, hey, I just used the training that I received, and it's a dangerous world out there. I'm doing my best. If this was so bad, then why didn't you outlaw it? You didn't? Oh, I see. You see that out that it potentially gives them. So you could potentially get somebody like a Derek Chauvin to actually walk if you played this right. Now, if I could take this back, though, for a second to this agreement, one of the other problems that I have with the agreement with the city council is that part of the reason that the city council would resolve a civil case like this is it's about community as a whole. You see what I mean? It's about saying to the community, we acknowledge responsibility, and this is about collectively how we address it. Well, let's imagine if Derek Chauvin is convicted. If what you, and you're going to get a lot of emotion from that regardless of what happens, if what you had at that point was the city coming in saying, we're going to resolve this case too, and we're going to pay this family, then you're going to get more people to relax and maybe not be as aggressive as they might. At the same time, if Derek Chauvin walks and we see what could potentially come out of that, if the city had waited and then came out at that point and said $27 million goes to the family, that might do something to tamp down some of that fear as well. But now what you've done is you've spent it now, which is basically causing enormous amounts of heartburn to the court system. And it's almost as if they either didn't care about the due process requirement that's going on, right? Or they actually wanted to sort of throw something on top of Derek Chauvin themselves at this point, which makes it even harder for themselves.
So basically, from your opinion, or from what you've just said, the way to take it is the city council, the mayor, this was more about them trying to make themselves feel good and look good and announcing this settlement now, as opposed to waiting until either, or doing it before the trial, like you said, before the jury selection, or doing it later on.
Yes. Okay. If they had said, you know what, let's impanel this jury even before it starts. Then you get a sequestered jury. So what you get is as clean of a legal system as possible. I mean, look, we have to believe that the system works. And I understand I had kids out in the streets. I lived 10 blocks from where George Floyd died. I get that piece. But at the same time, if we believe in the Constitution, we believe in it for the people who we think might be the worst. And that means that Derek Chauvin has a presumption of innocence until or if the jury finds him guilty, and he has due process, which means he should get a fair trial, so we can all stand behind it transparently and say, you know what, he had a trial and it went the way that it went.
Jack Rice, kind enough to join us. What about Ramsey County? I mean, obviously, if you want a jury made up of as close to as similar to the Hennepin County as you can, Ramsey County would be the obvious choice, correct?
I don't disagree with you. My office is in St. Paul. I walk those benches and I walk those courtrooms. Well, I did before the COVID piece anyway, for decades and decades. And that was the same thing in Hennepin County. And that's a possibility. They could try it there. But of course, the fear that you're going to get is that the closer you get to Hennepin, the Strib sort of crosses over, the Pioneer Press crosses over, a lot of the news media crosses over the cities, whereas if you get just outside of that first ring or second ring or third ring suburb, and you go up to, well, you go down south, maybe you go to Mankato, maybe you go to St. Cloud, maybe you go to Duluth, you could do all of those. But if we look back at what it is that Peter Cahill said, and this is the judge, what he said, one of the problems that we have here is the security is insane in a case like this. Now, imagine trying to have security in a small courthouse who really doesn't have the capability that we're seeing in Minneapolis, which has the most, the biggest, for instance, it has underground tunnels, it has back elevators, it has a whole bunch of things that allow for people to move in ways that some of the other courthouses don't. I mean, I can take you to Rock County, Minnesota, where they got none of that. They have one courtroom, and, you know, there's about one or two doors. There's one door, and then there's the back door if you want to sneak out, and that's it.
Yeah.
So I think you got to think about that.
Well, and by what you say, if they end up moving this trial, really, it comes down to Ramsey County, Rochester, or Duluth, because I can't believe that the prosecution would tolerate moving it into almost a lily white area and expecting, you know, there to be a fair representation of the jury. Jack joining us. Jack, what about putting a hold on the trial? Is there a case, the case where the Cahill might come on out and say, you know what, I'll tell you what, we're going to let's get some distance between this settlement and the trial. We'll, you know, dismiss all the jurors right now. We'll start the whole process again in 2 months.
Well, they could. I mean, that's actually what Derek Chauvin's lawyer is trying to accomplish right now. And the argument is that, hey, we don't know the impact that this is going to have. We don't know what this jury has heard or not heard. This would give us some time to do some research on this issue. We could probably bring in a polling company who could come in and say, well, what have you heard? Does this change that dynamic? And so that is possible. I think it's not very likely, because once you get this juggernaut rolling, I think there's a lot of people who don't want this to stretch out, and they wouldn't want to see this happen again, because then you have to ramp it back up. And what happens with those seven, in this case, nine jurors that they already have in place? Do you cut them loose and start over? How many millions of dollars have we already dropped trying to get this thing to work right? And are we going to just sort of mess this up even further, or exaggerate it, or extend the violence, or just about everything else that we're afraid of right now?
The jury, let's turn to that. Nine members have been seated as of right now. In your opinion, how do you think it's been going better for the prosecution or the defense on the jury selection?
Well, you know, I would have said last week, and I wrote about this, that I thought the defense was winning. Mm-hmm. And the reason I said that at the time was because of a couple of the jurors that they were able to get through. That first juror was that white chemist. And I hate to use the term white chemist, but he's white and he's a chemist.
Yes.
And in that case, what we have here is part of the defense strategy is going to be the distinction between that first medical autopsy report and that second autopsy report. And really the argument they're going to make is, you know what, there was only one official report, the first one. The second one was actually done by the George Floyd family, and that's the one that the prosecution wants to use. But the first one talks about the drugs that were in George Floyd's system and the fact that he had COVID and some of the other issues that were there. Because if you can make the argument, or at least part of the argument that you make, is that Derek Chauvin did not kill George Floyd, and this will be a piece of this, then the argument is George Floyd killed George Floyd. Now, as unsavory as it feels in my own mouth to say that,
yes,
when you're talking about how you work a jury, this is how you work a jury, and you get somebody like that. But there was a second juror, Matt, and this second juror was the one that said, and I almost have the quote, but the quote was something like, if the police have somebody in handcuffs, it must be because of something they did. Mm-hmm. And the prosecution strike that juror for cause, because what that tells me is I have a juror who buys what the cops say. And if Derek Chauvin can take the stand, look that juror in the face and say, I was just doing my job. I was just doing my job as best I could. And if he says it earnestly enough, guess what? If nobody else buys it, but I get that guy, I might have a hung jury here. So, but that being said, the last two witnesses that were chosen, I think that have some potential benefit for the prosecution in this case. Mm-hmm. And I think regardless of everything else, there is one thing, 8 minutes and 46 seconds.
Yeah.
8 minutes and 46 seconds. And it's one of the most brutal things I think many people have ever seen in their lives. And they are going to see this thing, not just once, not just twice, at least three times, I'm guessing, and more.
And the one thing I keep thinking of, and you know juries a lot better than I do, if you have a multiracial jury, that it's one thing to be back at home and up on Facebook and on Twitter and say, I'm with the cops, you know, I can't believe anyone would do wrong. It's another thing to watch that video and then get into a jury room and try to tell people, oh, there's nothing wrong that he did here. I think that you know, having a multicultural jury will make it, I think it's going to be, especially with that video, harder for the prosecutor, for the defense, to basically be able to expect that this is going to be, you know, one guy is going to overturn the whole jury.
You know, Matt, I wish I could agree with you.
Okay.
I do, but my problem is this. In light of the last year, 4 years of our former president,
yes.
I recall sitting in a jury myself with my client who was from Somalia, and she had hijab on, and one of those potential jurors pointed at her and said, because I was asking about race, and I was asking about vice, and I was pushing. And she pointed at her and said, she looks like a terrorist. Now, if you can be proud of saying that, and this woman was, in front of a multiracial jury, I think you can say a lot of things. Mm. The world is not what we think it is sometimes, and there are some people who are willing to say some pretty atrocious things, if we want to call it that. So I don't know if I would say, because it's multiracial, that people are going to be more sensitive to it.
Well, and this is why I have you on the air, because you know this stuff better than I do, man.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It breaks my heart sometimes when I see it. You know, it's a frustrating thing, because we see where we are. But I know that as I unfold this, the thing that makes this hard is that I'm on the defense. My job is regularly to watch the prosecutors roll the police out like they're gods. And they say that these guys are doing their best and they're just trying and they have no skin in the game and they're not biased and they're completely objective. I see prosecutors do it all the time. And the thing is they are biased frequently. Not always. There are some who are good police officers, but there are some police officers who aren't. And so the problem is, as I'm having to push back up that hill, and there are a lot of people who look at police officers and want to believe that they are the good guys. And some of them really are, but there are some who absolutely are not. And so the weird part for me is, on the defense side, I can't help but think about this from a defense side, and now I'm defending the very guy that I've heard said about people who dressed like he used to dress. He's one of the good guys. He doesn't have any skin in the game. He's completely unbiased. All of those things. And so I'm full of self-loathing when I talk about this one, Pat.
JackRiceLaw.com, JackRiceLaw.com. Head there if you want some defense advice. By all means, Jack's the best, absolutely the best. JackRiceLaw.com. Jack Rice, thank you very much. Hope to talk to you before too long. Get another update, okay?
Whatever you need, my friend.
Take care. Jack Rice, kind enough to join us. We'll spotlight that interview for sure. 952-946-6205. Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thanks to Jack. Coming up here in just a little bit, Jonathan Raylander and Kami Miller from DFL Senate District 41. They've got a forum they're going to have coming up here on domestic terrorism. We'll talk about that. But I wanted to make sure I mentioned this story, kind of a follow-up to a story we talked about last week with the Ramsey City Council saying that they were going to outlaw any kind of mask usage in the city of Ramsey. The Twin Cities chapter of the Japanese American Citizens League is blasting Ramsey City Council member Chelsea Howell for comparing the state's COVID-19 mask requirement with the experiences of Japanese Americans who were placed in concentration camps during World War II. The league said it was deeply concerned with Howell weaponizing the experiences of Japanese Americans to make her point and asked her to immediately to take steps to rectify her actions. According to a letter addressed to Howell posted on Facebook, we absolutely object to the use of our community experiences in your comparison, the league wrote. It is time of heightened anti-Asian sentiment and radicalized violence. Your careless and misinformed comments undermine public health efforts and the disproportionate expense of the communities of color. Howell was one of four Ramsey City Council members who on March 9th voted in favor of a resolution preventing the city from using its resource to enforce Tim Walz's mask mandate. The Howell is, of course, is hiding now. She's not answered calls or emails asking her to explain herself. Can I just, you know, once again, public service announcement, white people, all right? Your minor inconveniences, such as wearing a face mask during a pandemic, you may not agree with it, but your first thing you shouldn't do is find one of the greater injustices that's happened, especially an injustice that happened to, I don't know, a specific racial group or a specific religious group, and compare your minor inconvenience to what those people went through. You have to wear a face mask to go in the hardware store. They were rounded up. Many of them lost a lot of their possessions, were put into horrible concentration, like, you know, like concentration camp experiences, and kept there as prisoners in their own country. No! You having to wear a face mask is not like that. Or when, who is the woman, the woman from The Mandalorian, the actress who basically said criticism of conservatives is like what the Jews went through in Nazi Germany. No, that is not what it was like. You know, the pictures of the extracted gold teeth that the Nazis ripped out of Jews' mouths. Dear Lord, don't just, if you're a white person and you're upset about something, if you can't build up outrage just by explaining what's happening to you, don't feel like you can double down by basically just comparing your outrage to something else. All right? All right. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. When we come on back, Jonathan Raylander and Kami Miller are going to join us. We'll talk about a forum on domestic terrorism when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Coming up tomorrow at 6:30 in this is going to be in Senate District 41, the DFL, of course, which is just in the north part of the metro, just kind of just north of, a little northeast of Minneapolis, northwest of St. Paul, 41, where Senator Mary Kunesh is the senator up there. They're going to be having a forum on domestic terrorism. Joining us to talk about this, Jonathan Raylander, he is the DFL Senate 41 chair, and Kami Miller, she's the first vice chair of Senate District 41, both kind enough to take some time out of their day to talk about tomorrow's event. Hi, guys.
Hello.
How are you, Matt?
I'm doing very well. So, first of all, let's talk about the idea for this. I mean, especially after 1/6, what happened in the U.S. Capitol, and then some of the verbiage you heard coming even out of the St. Paul Capitol, and of course, once again, they had to evacuate Governor Walz's son from the governor's mansion. It's not too hard to see why domestic terrorism has to start being looked at with a larger microscope at this point.
Absolutely. We've been doing forums on various topics throughout the last few years, but this one obviously is something that's on everybody's mind, particularly since January 6th. It's nothing new in the United States, but particularly now it's obviously foremost on a lot of people's minds.
When you address this, obviously, and I should mention, let's start off. Let's talk about who all the people of the panel is going to be on this forum.
Well, there we've been pretty lucky. We were able to get quite a few people involved with this one. We've got some representatives from our own district, which would be Connie Bernardi and Sandra Feist. Senator Mary Kunesh is not going to be able to join us, unfortunately. We just found out this afternoon. She just got elected Alumni of the Year from her alma mater, so she won't be joining us.
Nicely done, though. Nicely done for her, for sure.
Absolutely. But we've got Ramsey County Attorney John Choi, Anoka County Attorney Tony Palumbo. We've got Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison. We've got Hennepin Sheriff Dave Hutchinson. We've got, the Minnesota FBI SAC, Michael Paul. And we've got a recorded interview that we had to do with Representative Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, who was not going to be able to join us live that night.
One of the things I find that's interesting and I like about this forum is it's approaching the fight against domestic terrorism from all points, not only the political point of view, but your county attorneys, the state attorney general, you know Hutch, the head of a county sheriff, as well as also the FBI and the federal level. Talk about that, because I mean, I think that it doesn't do a lot of good unless you have kind of a cohesive team that's discussing about this stuff.
Jamie, I'll let you talk about that a bit.
I think that what we need to start recognizing is that domestic terrorists means that these people are living in our communities and they're growing these opinions and sometimes taking actions from within our communities. So that's why we need to be speaking with representatives from our communities to say that you know, what this is a concern for Ramsey County. This is a concern for Hennepin County. This is a concern for Anoka County. And getting people on that are actually dealing with this, either in the arrests or prosecution, will bring this to kind of a reality for Minnesota, and not just, you know, what happened at the U.S. Capitol, but that there are concerns here in Minnesota. And these are the people that know about it. So we want to bring on people who could speak to it in relationship to where we live in this time.
So let's make sure we give people the details here. How, if someone wants to be part of this, how do they take part of it?
Well, we're going to be broadcasting live on Facebook. And if people are looking for links, it's going to be on our Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and look for Senate District 41 DFL. And that's our public page, and there'll be links to join in that way. The panelists will be joining via Zoom, but the whole thing will be broadcast live. And so what we're looking to do is take, because we don't want to have a lot of pre-canned questions. We've got some that we need, that we all have in our pocket in case we need them. But what we're looking at is civic participation here. So we want people to send us their questions and let us know what they want to hear about from these folks. Because, again, these are folks that are not only local, but statewide, and we want to get a variety of, and there are 11 hate groups, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, that are being tracked in our state right now. Some of them are local, some of them are statewide. So we want people to be able to ask about this and get more details about how this is being addressed.
So, and I think, once again, and I'll put out the links on all my social media as well for the Facebook page so people can take part. Once again, this is tomorrow night, 6:30, Facebook Live. I also like the idea, and I think it's important to make sure to people out there, because you always get people that will try to, you know, kind of load questions. You're going to go pre-approve these questions. It's not about people are going to go out there and try to turn this into a, you know, a pro-domestic terrorism event. So, you know, we need to make sure people do understand there's going to be some filter on this. But I like the idea because I think, let's face it, I think the media in the last 4 years did an unbelievably bad job, and I'm going to be blunt, bad job at treating domestic terrorism as it was after Charlottesville, after these events. We did not look at this, and it took, you know, the disaster at the U.S. Capitol for people to realize, hey, maybe these organizations, which are almost looked upon in some communities as like civic groups, are not really the up and up groups that we think that they are.
Yeah. Mm.
No, I think that's an interesting point to make. And that's something that, you know, obviously it got coverage. We saw, everybody saw the horrific images from Charlottesville and from the state from the United States Capitol on January 6th. But there are things that are happening all over the country,
yes,
as far as that goes, that are just as horrific in their own way. And it doesn't have to be a national event to be covered, but so few of them ever get the attention that really I think they need so people do understand. This is a systemic problem. This is an ingrown problem, and it's something that needs to be talked about and addressed. And whether that's new legislation, there's differing opinions about how that needs to happen. Some people think there needs to be new laws. Some people, surprisingly, on the right and the left, think the laws we've got on the books are sufficient. We just need to be prioritizing these correctly. So it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of the conversation.
That's why I'm glad Hutch is there, the Hennepin County Sheriff, Dave Hutchinson. I'm glad he's going to be there, because having someone who works day-to-day with law and knows the laws in and out, that will be a big help in being able to determine, do we have enough there? Plus the FBI being involved as well. I will be remiss, of course, 41 is one of my favorite districts. Not only Senator Kunesh is up there, the Minnesota Representative Sandra Feist. It's like I came up with "Let's get feisty." I love that. Kami Miller, let's bring you on back in here. Let's talk about this. It's a great opportunity for. First of all, we want to encourage everyone in your district, since this is being put on for 41, to be part of this. But it's also a great opportunity for people to get to know your district a little bit better by coming in from some of the other districts around the area. Correct.
Correct. Yes. I mean, we're opening. That's why we're doing it Zoom and we're doing it Facebook. We're trying to open it up to anyone that would like to hear from these elected officials and these public officials. And when we do these issues forums, which we have been doing, we've always wanted it to be as open as it can be as to anyone. You don't have to be a DFLer. You don't have to reside in 41. We're just trying to bring these issues to the forefront and have really good conversations with the people that are, you know, potentially making laws or enforcing those laws. So we're trying to keep it open to anybody that would like to join in, listen in, participate via questions. It's for 41, but it's definitely for anybody else that would like to, you know, participate, would like to learn more about whatever topic we present.
And Jonathan, one last time here, why don't we give all the details how people can join you tomorrow night?
Okay, sure thing. The best way is to go to, again, our Facebook page. It's on Facebook. Just look for Senate District 41 DFL. And we've got a post pinned to the top of our public page there. And it's going to have a link that they can click on. That is the best way. The Zoom, obviously, we have limitations on how many people can access this via Zoom, so we prefer to have people go through the Facebook page, because we have unlimited a number of people who are able to access it that way.
And that's going to be the best way for you. If you don't want to run into problems, do the Facebook live stream. Once again, tomorrow night, 6:30 on Facebook, the Facebook page for DFL Senate District 41. Jonathan Raylander, the chair of Senate District 41, and Kami Miller, first vice chair. Guys, all my best. Congratulations on this. This is actually a pretty spectacular lineup for this forum. You usually don't see them this good. All my best. Congratulations. And we'll spotlight this interview. I hope it goes well for you tomorrow night.
Great. Appreciate it, Matt. Thank you.
My pleasure. Once again, Jonathan Raylander, Kami Miller from Senate District 41, kind enough to join us. It's interesting because we do not treat this domestic terrorism as we should. As a matter of fact, there is a story today. Oh, and I got this one. This one I'm quite happy to see. That is going on there. The U.S. law enforcement agents have arrested two men who participated in the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, charged them with the assaulting of the officer who died after responding to the riot. Now, they are focusing, if you have not been paying attention, initially they thought maybe Officer Sicknick had been killed by a fire extinguisher to the head or something of that nature. They realized that was probably not the case. But what they'd got in turn was that they had had the bear spray, and there were numerous videos of individuals who had individuals spraying something at law enforcement. And this is bear spray. If you go hiking in the woods, you go hiking in Alaska or a glacier, you can buy the stuff called bear spray, which, if a bear comes charging at you, you can spray it. It's basically pepper spraying the bear. Okay. I prefer to go into black bears in Minnesota generally will not mess with you. They won't bother you. The bears that like to kind of do a lot of nasty stuff, I kind of avoid those areas, but hey, try to mace the bear. Needless to say, these people were buying this outdoors gear and were using it as a weapon. It's believed Officer Sicknick died due to the exposure to the bear spray. And so there has been this search. And thank you, FBI. Thank you very much to the people that identified him. Julian Ellie Cater, 32, of Pennsylvania. George Pierre Tanios, 39, of West Virginia. were arrested Sunday are expected to appear in federal court on Monday. The Washington Post first reported Cater and Tanios are charged with 9 counts, including assaulting U.S. Capitol Police officer Brian Sicknick with a deadly weapon. Sicknick's died as a result of the riot, though the exact cause has not been released. 4 rioters also died that day. 2 police officers who responded to the attack died by suicide days later. The 2 were also charged with assaulting other Capitol Police officers and D.C. police officer with a deadly weapon, as well as with civil disorder and obstruction of a congressional proceeding. The charges are punishable by up to 20 years in prison, the Post reported. Surveillance footage of the riot shows the 2 working together to assault law enforcement officers with an unknown chemical substance by spraying officers directly in the face and eyes, according to the FBI search warrant filed Sunday. Sicknick, who sprayed with bear spray during the attack, once again, if you go onto these tracking sites, Brett, that are out there tracking the Capitol rioters, there is video of these 2 clowns, these 2 traitors, actually saying, "Give me that bear blank," Cater can be heard telling Tanios as he reached into Tanios's backpack earlier in the day, according to contemporary recorded open source video. He later grabbed the canister from Tanios' backpack, walked through the crowd outside. So you actually hear him asking for the bear spray from the other guy. Cater then grabbed the canister and then walked through the crowd outside the Capitol before holding it up, the item in his right hand and aiming at police officers. The FBI wrote in the complaint, Sicknick and the 2 other officers each reacted with being sprayed in the face by retreating, bringing their hands to their faces and rushing to find water to wash out their eyes. Cater was arrested as he disembarked from the airplane at Newark Airport in New Jersey, officials said. Tanios was arrested as his residence in West Virginia. Law enforcement officials have arrested over 250 people, almost to 300 now, suspected and connected in the Capitol riot. These people, these 2 clowns, they're not going to get out of jail for a long time. They are going to prison for a long, long time. Because even if there is a question on whether or not the bear spray was the official cause of death for Sicknick, you have these 3 idiots, or these 2 idiots, out there spraying down police officers in the face, and you can clearly see them doing it. So you have them assault with intent to kill. I mean, I think that that's really what you could be saying, especially spraying it at that distance. Lock them up forever. They're traitors to America. And they should never, never be allowed to see. In my mind, they should never be allowed to see the light of day again. Never again. That the rest of their lives, these traitors to America, traitors to the flag, should never see the light of day. That's domestic terrorism. And although I don't know if those people have any affiliation with any of these groups that people are talking about, it's pretty clear that the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, all these groups, they were out there. They're pushing an agenda. And that agenda is a, you know, white power, white supremacy, you know, Republicans uber alles, far right Republicans uber alles kind of mentality, fascism, basically. So, you know, treat them accordingly. And once again, that forum tomorrow night, 6:30, Senate District 41. I'll get the links posted. Let's spotlight that interview with the 2 of them as well. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. 1 final segment. When we do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show. I got to tell you the truth. Did you watch any of the Grammys last night? Any of the Grammy Awards?
I did not last night, no.
No. Taylor Swift wins for her. That album is shockingly good. I do think Megan Thee Stallion got robbed for a record of the year. That one went to Billie Eilish. I think Megan Thee Stallion got that. You know, I'm there with it. Nothing I like more than, instructional videos. And, Megan Thee Stallion... Hello. Okay. Doja Cat too. I like them. I like them. It is interesting. They hardly air any of the awards on that show. And it was always tough because there are so many categories for that. You know, no one really cares about the Bluegrass Album of the Year, you know? But I did catch some of that. The other story that I wanted to make sure I mentioned here before we finish out was the story. Okay, so the stimulus checks are coming. Many banks already have money coming in. As a matter of fact, it was announced that a lot of people would already probably have the money available to them by this weekend. But two banks in particular, Chase and Wells Fargo, have said that the official date of the checks is technically St. Patrick's Day, coming up here on Wednesday, the 17th. And they basically are not going to give people their money until that day. And people are like, you know, they have it there, but it seems like, and now, once again, we've talked about Wells Fargo is just, I mean, that bank, the people that were have been running that bank for the last few years, it has been disturbing. We talked about the initial groups of people who went out there and were purposely trying to you know create penalties against their own customers. God, I can't remember the name of the woman that was. The woman that the executive who pretty much was the ringleader of it, who retired right before the police got there, and you know, yeah, she didn't really suffer any kind of ill will for ripping off a lot of her own customers. Then they had their whole thing, and that was a huge write up that they had in the New York Times in regards to the foreclosing on houses and stuff like that, saying mortgage payments were coming in and the amount of people that they were absolutely ripping off. And now here you have a case where it seems like what they're trying to do is trying to find some way. I mean, once again, this money is there. It's guaranteed. The federal government is giving this money out. It's going to these people and they do not want to give it to them until they're ready for it. And it allows them to, it's something with the amount of equity they have in the books for a few days that it can help them in their bottom line. That's not the point of this. The point of this is to try to get money into the hands of the people that really need it. And frankly, it doesn't seem like that is a concern for a lot of the people who are you know, really indecently in you know, needing the help. So here you go once again, and I don't know that much about Chase. You know, I'm not with Chase. But it's, I just getting so damn tired of this modern day executive stance where the entire point of the corporation is to basically make sure the executives are taken care of at the expense of everyone else. And it really does bother me when you do get that in regards to the you know stuff like this. I mean, these people have had to wait long enough. They need help. They need the government to come on out and give them the assistance that they need. And instead, what we're getting is we're getting blah. So, now, I lost my clock here, just FYI. So just give me a signal when we're almost out of time, all right? Looking at the roadways right now, roads are pretty nasty. They got a little bit of heavier snow out there, so watch out. Give yourself some time as you're going around. Delays and just until this stuff melts, and it will melt. It's one of those snowfalls where people will not necessarily be out shoveling, so, because we're all tired of it at this point. Robert, Pilot, and crew, they're up next. Have a good one. Until tomorrow. See ya.